all across America and around the world, this is Veterans Radio.
This is Veterans Radio.
Welcome to Veterans Radio. I am Jim Fossone. I'm the officer of the deck today. We've got some great programs for you. I think you'll find very interesting. We always want to remind you, you can find more about Veterans Radio at its Facebook site or at the web. VeteransRadio.org is our new URL, VeteransRadio.org, where we're on the web 24/7. You can find a lot of our podcasts there as well. We post new ones every Tuesday, so you can get a new story, a new interview, something you didn't know before by going to VeteransRadio.org. And before we get started, we want to thank our sponsors. First up, we want to thank National Veteran Business Development Council, NVBDC.org. It was established to certify both service-disabled and veteran-owned businesses. You'll find out how they can help your business by going to NVBDC.org. We want to thank Legal Help for Veterans. Legal Help for Veterans fights for veterans' disability rights all across the nation. You can reach them at 800-693-4800 or on the web at LegalHelpForVeterans.com. We're talking today on Veterans Radio with Captain John P. Cordell, retired from the U.S. Navy, and Lieutenant Commander Reuben Keith Green, retired from the U.S. Navy as well. Both gentlemen we've talked to a number of different times on important subjects, but they recently wrote an article that focuses on a subject we've had some passing discussion on, but I want to have some more, which is the tragedy of the lost generation. And that's about the lack of representation of minorities, African Americans, in the United States Naval Academy. It percentage-wise, I think, John, you were telling me that while the Navy overall has a 17% black census, the Naval Academy only has about 6%. Is that right?
Right. I recently looked up their demographics of the class of 2024, and it's about 6.8%. Now, the numbers get a little fuzzy because some people identify with multiple ethnic groups. You know, mother was black, father was white. As we were talking about the past, with folks applying, General Williams reminded me that, hey, back in the day, if you had the option to not put black when you knew that nobody could look you up on the internet or interview you in person, you didn't put black, you put white. And so the numbers may be skewed a little bit, but that's what they said, about 6.8% black midshipmen.
And you referenced a book that I think we ought to give a little mention to, which is Blue and Gold and Black, Racial Integration of the U.S. Naval Academy by historian Robert Schneller.
That's correct. Mm-hmm.
When I read your article and looked at his writing, and it sort of, you know, it, when you say it out loud, it makes sense. There are certainly states that because appointments are made by senators and congressmen and women, there are certain areas of the country that have just avoided nominating to the academies a diverse racial population. Was this something that just was obvious and I just never thought about it?
Not at all. So the path to that was through actually the Navy History and Heritage Command. A friend of ours named Denise Krepp, who actually advocated for the renaming of a base that was named for one of her ancestors because he was a Confederate. She actually pointed me towards the Naval Academy archivist, who basically sent me a database, and we got permission to use it, and essentially of all the nominations from all of the Naval Academy going back as far as digital records, which was 1978. And then we basically searched through that data and sorted by state, and then we looked at the demographics of the state and said, okay, are the demographics of the state, you know, the percent black population represented by the percent of nominations. And when you sort that, those two columns, magically all 12 southern states percolate to the bottom with the worst ratio, with Mississippi with the absolute worst ratio. No, it was not readily apparent, and nobody else that I've talked to had even looked at it. So that was kind of mind-boggling to discover.
And Keith, talk a little bit about why it's important that the academies, not just the Naval, but we're focusing on the Naval Academy, that the military academies kind of reflect our general population in terms of who gets into these prestigious positions.
Well, during the Vietnam War, the number one complaint of black sailors was that they had no black officers to go to their, to share their concerns with. And the Navy and Army took very different approaches on that. The Army banned the Confederate flag in theater in the Vietnam War, and powerful people like Mississippi Senator John C. Stennis pressured the Army to reverse that ban. You had KKK rallies, cross burnings, et cetera, et cetera. You would go into your commander's office and he'd have a big giant Confederate flag on the wall behind him sitting in the in his office in Vietnam. So because there were so few black officers, black people felt like they weren't being heard, they weren't being respected, and they weren't being treated fairly. And all the statistics bear that out. Fast forward to today, you've got all these claims of DEI hires and color over merit, when they don't even understand the history of how we got to the limited number of black officers that exist right now. It is important, if you're going to have a diverse force, that they have people that look like them and represent them. One of the biggest problems in the military justice system is that there are very few black judge advocate general officers. And many of the issues that are treated as disciplinary issues are actually cultural and communications issues. And when you've got someone that has racial bias and they are trying to communicate with someone that is experiencing racial bias, you're setting yourself up for failure. I don't want to see the military go back into a period where you're having this racial strife because you've got a majority white leadership leading a very diverse force, and they have no skin in the game in terms of changing the, that dynamic. But the black people and the minorities, Jewish, black, Hispanic, et cetera, they know what they're experiencing on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah, I think it's one of those situations where if you and I think it was language you used, John, if you don't start out as an admiral, you got to work your way up from being an ensign. And if you're not coming out of an academy with a bunch of ensigns who are in the minority classifications, they're not going to, by attrition and everything else over 30 years, they're not going to be there in the flag ranks, are they?
Right, right. Yeah, that number never gets bigger, right? It can only start where it starts and then start to work its way down as you try. And that's, but back to Keith, one of the big counter arguments that I see, and there was a recent article in the Naval Institute making this argument that we're sort of post-racism now, and that we need to focus on meritocracy, and that the military should be a pure meritocracy. And I fully agree that your advancement should be based on merit. But one of the purposes, and Keith can probably articulate this better than I can, of affirmative action was to try to close that gap between opportunity, whether it was wealth opportunity, education opportunity, it was a racial gap, and at least give people who had not had those opportunities a leg up so they could compete in a meritocracy on an equal basis. But you can't have a meritocracy if I can't get in the door in the first place.
Well, and you point out from the statistics, it's sort of a quiet, we just won't make any appointments or a limited number of appointments. It's a very subtle and quiet bias. Keith, react if you would.
Well, in addition to that, about a few years ago, I did an interview with Steve Walsh at KPBS, and the article was why there's so few black admirals in the U.S. Navy. And Admiral Sinclair Harris talked about the Death Valley phase of a black officer's career after about 10 or 12 years when they've been fighting this perception of lack of qualification and subtle racial discrimination and open racial discrimination. They finally decide that they're just not willing to do it anymore and throw in the towel. And then those people are taken out of the selection pool for some of the most motivated people decide that I can't do this anymore. I'm not going to do this anymore and go get a job in the civilian community. And then they get blamed for not being able to hack it or not willing to hack it when they're competing against people that have not had in any way, shape, or form to deal with those issues. I left the Navy at 22 years because I simply could not take the discrimination I was facing from my commanding officer, who asked me when I challenged him on why he was mistreating me. He smirked at me and said, "Do you feel like a second-class citizen?" And he was completely protected by the people when I filed a five-page discrimination complaint against him, a rock-solid, thoroughly documented case, and he was protected and went on to abuse a ship full of people before he retired as a Navy captain.
Well, we're having this discussion about admissions to the academies, in part because the U.S. Supreme Court in the last year struck down race-conscious admissions at civilian schools, and that raised a question of, well, can race or gender be used in a qualifying applications to the academies? And there are many groups who are filing briefs and motions and saying, yeah, you've got to be able to use these factors if we're going to have the right officer corps going forward. And I know earlier in the year I spoke to the National Association of Black Women Veterans, and it was one of the major issues for that group that they were advocating for. If this is not improved, do you see, John, based on the statistics you ran, are the southern states going to continue what they're doing? Can California make up the difference? New York? How do the statistics tell you this will all work itself out?
Well, you know, when you draw two dots on the board, they lead to a line, and you can follow that line. And so if you do away with the ability to at least consider race, you know, the numbers aren't going to go up. The other two things, points I would make, Jim. Number one, no one records the number of nominees who were not accepted. And so we don't even know how many applications there were by any sort of demographic means, and what percentage were rejected, whether it was, you know, white, black, Hispanic.
And, you know, let me just give you an example of why this is important. When the first black Secretary of the Army, Clifford Alexander, received a promotion list for one-star general, there were no black people on the list. And he rejected the list. He said, "You can't tell me that there's not one black colonel in the entire United States Army that is not ready and capable of being promoted and has not earned it." So he sent the list back and said, "Go back and look at your top black candidates." And when they returned the list to him, the name of Colin Powell had been added to that list. Colin Powell was preparing to retire as a colonel. His career was over. And then all of a sudden he gets a new lease on life because the black Secretary of the Army knew that they needed to have a more diversified Army Corps. So imagine how many times that has happened since then, particularly in the Navy, where these very highly qualified black people have been looked over because they're not part of the same group as the rest of the people being considered.
It's a great example, and as I think most people know, Colin Powell didn't go to the academy. He got his commission through an ROTC scholarship. Again, kind of highlights he probably would never have gotten an appointment back in that point in time, and we really need to encourage the representative grouping of folks who get appointments to our academies to reflect the diversity of our country. There certainly are folks who have plenty of skills for it, but if you keep rejecting people, then at the same time, they're not going to apply. They're going to go, as you're saying, Keith, "Hey, I don't have a shot at this. Why am I even bothering?" Right?
That's correct.
Well, it's an important issue, and it's one that folks certainly need to think about and work on, and hopefully our congressional and senatorial staffers who really do the grunt work in getting academy appointments pulled together And the interviewing committees will approach this with a little bit of 2024 insight and not exclude people because of their race, ethnicity, gender. Lieutenant Commander Reuben Keith Green, U.S. Navy retired. As always, Keith, great to talk to you. Keep us informed as these things move forward. And if the Veterans Radio audience can provide any assistance, please feel free to reach out.
Thank you very much, Jim.
And I want to thank everybody for listening to Veterans Radio today. I am Jim Fossone. It's been a pleasure to be your host. I'm a veterans disability lawyer at Legal Help for Veterans, and you can reach us at 800-693-4800 or legalhelpforveterans.com on the web. You can follow Veterans Radio on Facebook and listen to its podcasts and internet radio shows
by visiting us at veteransradio.org. That's veteransradio.org.
And until next time, you are dismissed.
If you have a VA claim denied by the Board of Veterans Appeals, contact Legal Help for Veterans at 1-800-693-4800. They're experts in handling cases before the U.S. Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims. Their number again, 1-800-693-4800.
We again want to thank our national sponsors, the National Veterans Business Development Council, NVBDC.org, VA Ann Arbor Health Care System, the Vietnam Veterans of America Charles S. Kettles Chapter, Ann Arbor, Michigan, VFW Graf O'Hara Post 423 in Ann Arbor, and the American Legion Prescorn Post 46, also in Ann Arbor. We appreciate all your support. You can go to veteransradio.net, click on the sponsor level, and continue to support keeping Veterans Radio on the air. And until next time, you are dismissed.